you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. A beautiful Wednesday afternoon. I'm not just talking about the weather. Terry Savage is here, too.
Oh, wow. You made my day.
Well, nice to see you. Thanks for coming
in.
Good to
be here.
It's kind of a funny day. I'm laughing as we start because it's just, I don't know if there's like a biorhythm day or whatever, but everyone just seems to be a little on edge today. Not you so much. We're having a nice chat.
We were having a nice
Maybe
chat.
Maybe it's just me. could be. Okay. So we'll move on then. Let's talk about the future of Chicago. You know, Frank Sennett is on Wednesdays, and he's going to join us
from the phone.
Well, we're going to talk about other issues, but he's over there because they've got a big forum today.
Cranes had the Future of Chicago Forum, and I went over there. It was really fascinating. It was sold out, and it was sold out with ordinary people coming to attend this thing. I focused primarily on the panel that had the discussion of the city's fiscal crisis. There was one of the panelists, Kevin Orr, who was the city manager of Detroit, that really got everything together and realized, not when he came there after bankruptcy, but that he ultimately had to put the city into bankruptcy to get everybody to talk. And bankruptcy is a big buzzword. Larry Massal of the Civic Federation, no, Chicago's not like Detroit. We have a thriving a business community, corporate headquarters, and so forth. And there was great applause. We are not going to consider bankruptcy. And this Kevin Orr, who I was so impressed with, that I will tell you right now, I give you my long shot odds that he will be mayor of Chicago
really?
One day.
Okay.
I don't know what he's doing now, but he's out of Detroit, was talking about the fact that in his experience trying to save Detroit, all of the constituencies, whether it was the unions, whether it was the bondholders, nobody would get together, the legislature, and actually work out a deal until he forced the city into bankruptcy and a federal judge moderated a discussion. And as you could see him, hear him talking about the reality of this experience, you wonder, what will it take for the state government, for the governor, for the politicians downstate, for the unions, for the teachers, for the sake of the schools, will it take something like that to force Chicago to confront this $25 billion unfunded pension liability? We have a tough budget situation without that.
Right.
We could probably make it if we hadn't made those promises. And the Supreme Court in Illinois wrote, we got to keep those promises.
Right. I mean,
so
that's what the Constitution
says. Anyway, kudos to Cranes for convening a fabulous event.
All right. We'll talk to Frank a little bit more about that later. I don't know if there's a retail sales number out or department stores are doing.
Department store stocks are up today. Kohl's was up and then Macy's was up. Look, we have a great irony going on now. We have numbers. The Fed will meet today. The odds are now, I mean, 2 weeks ago I would have said, yeah, they're going to raise rates. Then we got numbers that showed no jobs, virtually no jobs. Few jobs are being created. The economy too weak for the Fed to raise rates. However, retail sales are up, and even the department stores, which aren't getting their share of the sales, a lot's online, those stocks are up today. And why, by the way, are retail sales up? Because you, all of us consumers, are out there shopping. And what are we using without the strong job numbers to bolster our income, because incomes aren't up? We are using credit cards. And here we go again. The credit card numbers are climbing. In fact, one major card issuer said it's setting aside more reserves, this just today, for bad debt. And please, a warning from Terry Savage. Don't go charge up your credit card now. The economy's not strong enough for the Fed to even put rates back to normal. The global economy is struggling. And don't get caught buried in debt next time around.
Is this our own little individual episodes of irrational exuberance? I mean,
well,
we
not
think
yet,
things are getting better.
House
by house, you know, we think things are getting better. So it's like, we'll loosen things up.
We want to think things are getting better. Things ought to be getting better. That's a whole long discussion. But the fact is, if things were really getting better, the Fed would be raising rates. So please don't let your household budget get out of whack and let retail spending climb because you're doing it on your credit card. Now, this is personal advice. If everybody pulled in their horns and stopped shopping because Terry Savage said, don't get buried in debt again, then the economy would surely collapse. But fortunately, not enough people listen to me. Only you, my friends out there, look at your kids and say, you might not remember because it was 8 years ago now what happened when an economy slows and you're buried in debt. And debt is really going to hurt you as rates come down, and rates are not going up. They're staying the same or going down.
Let's jump overseas. We've got about a minute and a half left in this segment, and I'm fascinated by this whole Brexit thing. They're going to vote next week, Britain, England, whether or not to leave the European Union. The polls right now seem to indicate that they are. But as I recall, I think the Scotland polls were towards secession, too, and they ended up changing later.
You know, Britain has a history of not being very accurate in its polls, but if you want to know the real poll, it's the financial markets. The British pound is falling, volatility is rising, there's anxiety over in Europe, because if Britain pulls out of the European Union, they are a great, they're the third largest net contributor to the EU budget. And beyond that, every smaller country there is really worried about how the European Union will stick together and help them.
Right.
We have a lot of Polish community in Chicago, and I don't usually follow the Polish zloty as a currency, but the fact is it's been down for 4 days in a row. Poland's the third largest recipient of good stuff from the EU. And so the impact, not only in Europe, but in a minute when we come back, I'll tell you how it'll impact you, of Britain pulling out of the European Union will be, I think, significant, and the markets are pricing that in now.
It is a big, big thing, and it's going to happen next week, so we will talk. Actually, we're going to devote an entire segment or so to the issue later this week, but when we come back, Terry's going to talk a little bit about what that means, you know, why it's not just what's going on in England and Germany and all. It's 12:22, the Wintrust Business Lunch on a Wednesday afternoon here on 720 WGN. I'm Steve Bertrand. Thanks very much for tuning in. Hope you'll follow me on Twitter at Steve Bertrand, also on Facebook at Steve Bertrand, or the old-fashioned way, send me an email, stevebertrand@wgnradio.com. You can read Terry Savage's columns at terrysavage.com, and she's with us most Wednesdays for the first half hour of the show. So we're talking about Brexit and the impact there. Is there an impact here?
Yeah, well, let's start what's happening over there. The European bank stocks are all plummeting. There's concern about a general economic slowdown, perhaps defaults, because the lack of the disruption in trade if Britain really does leave. And let's say that it's up in the air right now. Be very interesting to see that vote. It's June 23rd.
What do you think? Give me a prediction.
I just can't believe they'll be dumb enough to vote to leave the union. But you never can tell, because we're in a global economy where there's nationalism and we're building walls of all sorts and not cooperating. So, I mean, it's just everybody says it's too close to call, but the markets are really worried. So what goes on in Europe when you're scared? You buy the safest thing, government bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And the European Central Bank is also buying government bonds with newly created money to try and get the economy going. So as more and more people chase government bonds, the prices go up, which means the yield goes down. Now, I have a terrific statistic for you. There's $7.85 trillion in negative-yielding sovereign debt, country debt. In Switzerland, 75% of their government bonds are negative yields. That means you're paying them to hold your money. Japan, 75%. In Germany, 70%. The Netherlands, 63%. In Austria, 56%. In France, more than half of the government debt yields less than zero. If everybody came to the U.S., because they wanted the safety of the U.S., what does it do? It pushes our interest rates down, and right now our 10-year government bonds are trading at their lows in modern times of 1.6%. There is a desire for safety in a crazy world. It's driven European yields to negative and Japanese, and now it's driving down U.S. yields.
So the idea is that people who had been investing in bonds, European bonds, it's no longer attractive to them, so they're investing in U.S. bonds?
A lot of that money is going to come to the U.S.,
yeah.
And that's driving down the 10-year note. We haven't even had the real crisis yet where money comes running to the U.S. It also drives up the stock market. It's an interesting phenomenon because they see yields in the stock market above our government bonds, and the U.S. is perceived as relatively safe. It's put a floor under our stock market. Interest rates are coming down. Now, here's my second warning of the day.
Okay.
My first warning was, hey, don't be the guys that are helping America recover by spending money in retail stores if it means you're going into debt. That was warning one.
So be patriotic, but only so much.
You know, not to the extent of
right.
messing up your finances. Warning number two is, you're a saver. You're really, really upset. You can't get anything on CDs or treasury bills or money market accounts. I mean, like, really anything. It's almost zero, and maybe it would be less than zero. So you are ripe to fall for a lot of arguments that are going on out there that say, oh, buy this package of commercial loans. It's really guaranteed because these are all the blah, 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 and you're going to get a yield of 5 or 6%. Look, yeah, it's okay if you want to pay for risk, but you're not getting paid enough to take the risk in those deals. Or we've got this annuity for you, and you'll get all the stock market, this and that, but you just have to lock your money up for a while, but da-da-da-da-da. You're enticed by the possibility of gain or the possibility of higher yields, but the risk-free yield, savings accounts, CDs, U.S. Treasuries, is just a little above zero now. Short-term money, chicken money, less than a year duration. You don't get any return, but you get the safety of your money. And please, all of you who are thinking, but I know, but I got to have more yield. That sounded like a really great sales pitch, a really great idea. Don't do that. Because the thing that is hardest to do, which is today to remain in safe money or chicken money investments, is always the best thing to do in the long run. You just don't see the risk out there until it comes right into your face.
So if you're thinking that, take a couple deep breaths, watch The Big Short. Right?
Well, just take a couple of deep breaths and say, you know, I'm not so concerned about the return. Come on with me on my money as I am about the return
of my money.
The mantra of the chicken money investor, don't be embarrassed. You're not earning anything. You've got that portion of your money safe. Other money may be in the market.
Nice to see you again, Terry. Thanks
Good
for coming by.
You.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch, Wednesday afternoon on 720 WGN. Frank Sennett usually comes by on Wednesdays, but he is, I guess there's a bit of a boycott or something. He's on a phone line and not here.
Well, I'm at the Palmer House, Steve, with Crane is doing its Big Future of Chicago conference here today. I urge everybody to check out facebook.com/CraneChicago to learn more. The mayor spoke, a lot of smart people talking about solving the city's problems. So, but thanks for having me.
Actually, you know, Terry Savage was just on, and she was there earlier in the day at your forum, and we talked quite a bit about it. She said it's been a pretty remarkable event so far. So, yeah, people can see more at Facebook.
Yeah, facebook.com/CraneChicago. If you have a whole recap on the videos, and you know, everybody from Rhymefest to the mayor to you know, real experts in finance and economic development and crime and education, all the key points of pain here in Chicago.
All right, so Frank comes by and talks about different stories that are in Cranes, and you can read of them more at chicagobusiness.com. But I want to start because it's kind of odd that we have this confluence of national news and local in a way. But on the Senate floor right now, the Democrats have begun a filibuster, an old-fashioned talk.
Yeah, the talking filibuster. Right?
Just started a few minutes ago, and this is about gun control legislation and this idea of putting people who are on the no-fly zone on a list where they cannot buy a weapon. You know, Hillary Clinton, you can like her or not, and, you know, that's up to you. But she, I think she put the argument so well yesterday. She said, you know, I'm taking, Frank, a group of 40 listeners to Prague and Vienna coming up in just a couple weeks. When we get on the airplane, we will be prohibited from bringing 5 ounces of shampoo on the plane. But right. If you are on the federal no-fly list because you might be considered a terrorist, you can go into a gun shop and buy a gun. It just doesn't make any sense. It
seems like a loophole, doesn't it?
It just seems bizarre. And, you know, also today Donald Trump said he's going to meet with the NRA to talk with them about this loophole or this gap, which is great. I hope he has success doing it. Fascinating to me that he's not talking to the members of Congress who could vote it in, but rather the money people. Yeah. You know, I think that sort of speaks to where we are in all of this.
Where the real power is in this process.
It is. And then one other thing, MarketWatch just put up a story which blew my mind. At the end of 2015, there were roughly 12,000 Starbucks locations in the United States. Right? There's a Starbucks on every corner, probably more Starbucks than anything else. Meantime, it says there were more than 55,000 firearms dealers in the country and another 8,000 pawnbrokers who sell firearms. So 62,000 places where you can buy a weapon compared to 12,000 where you can spend too much money for a cup of coffee. You know, that's not good or bad. I mean, that is what that is. You can buy guns legally, and that just sort of surprised me, that number. All right, so we bring all of that up to say the AMA meeting in Chicago this week says, hey, we want to start studying gun violence as a public health issue. And that goes back to the Congress where it's sort of been prohibited to do in some way or another. Tell me about that, Frank.
Yeah, so Congress had banned the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention from doing any kind of publicly funded research into gun violence, looking at it as a public health issue. There was some thought that the gun lobby didn't want these inconvenient studies to come out and perhaps pressure lawmakers to enact some gun control reform. So the American Medical Association meeting in Chicago just yesterday adopted a resolution urging for Congress to declare gun violence as a public health issue and, employ a public health response to address the problem. So allow publicly funded studies into gun violence and the causes and the effects.
The statement from the AMA says, look, there are 30,000 men, women, and children who die each year in this country from gun violence. We need to study it as a lot of public health dollars are spent on that. We need to study it as a public health issue and try to find a way to stop it. Now, the Congress has probably, I'm going to make this up, but I'm assuming it's true, authorized money on public health issues like the Zika virus or Ebola or things like that, but they've resisted when it comes to gun violence, and now the AMA says it's time to change on that. Let's stay at the hospital. I want to talk as well about this big hospital merger that looks like it's going to go forward now, Advocate in North Shore, right? That by one study, that's going to give them 60% of the beds, the hospital beds in the northern suburbs. That's a big deal.
It would be the dominant hospital network in Illinois, and the Federal Trade Commission was trying to block that merger. But in a court filing, the U.S. District Judge Jorge Alonso denied the FTC's motion for a preliminary injunction. So for now, at least, that merger is going forward.
And that's another that I think the FTC lost in a battle like this in Pennsylvania, right? So they're not doing so well.
No, they usually do prevail in these cases. So the fact that they've lost two of these preliminary injunction requests in a row is a bit surprising. They still could pursue other, legal appeals, but it looks a lot more likely now that that merger will go through. And for their part, the health systems have said that they're going to make sure that if they are able to merge, that consumers aren't affected negatively, and they, for instance, are going to offer a new insurance product that would cost 10% less than the lowest priced comparable product available, and they estimate that would save consumers $210 million to $1.1 billion every year. So, they are trying to say, look, we want the efficiencies of this merger, but we're not trying to gouge consumers.
And
so,
insurance is what this is about, right? Because the FTC said that if they've got such a dominant position in the market that they could sort of pressure insurance companies, right, to set different rates.
Well, it definitely improves their bargaining position, right? I mean, the bigger they are, the more patients they bring to the table, the better off they are in terms of negotiating with the insurance industry.
So we'll continue to watch that. And while we're in the northern suburbs, let's head over to the lakefront and Lake Forest. And tell me about this, the Wesley Farm, which is described as the Great Gatsby House. I talked with Dennis Rodkin from time to time about it, but it looks as if this sort of abandoned but historic piece of property is going to be redeveloped.
Yeah, it is the largest single developable open tract of land left in the Lake Forest area, and there have been development proposals before that have kind of fallen through during the recession, but now we have a proposal that's it looks like it's going to go forward, where they're going to convert this area into a housing tract with 30-some houses and in the 1 million and up range. And the historic significance of this mansion, which they're going to try to maintain intact.
Wait a minute. Let me say the name. You ready?
Yeah.
Generva King.
It's a great name, right? Generva.
It is. Tell me about Generva.
Yeah, so Generva apparently as a teenager captured the heart of a teenaged F. Scott Fitzgerald, who visited over two summers in the 19-teens. and kind of, you know, had an infatuation or a love for this young woman, and she spurned him. And apparently, according to the historians, this helped inspire F. Scott Fitzgerald to write a largely forgotten book called The Great Gatsby.
Yeah, no one's read that book. I don't think that's just collecting dust. So she was, this girl, 16-year-old Ginerva King, was Daisy Buchanan, and that comes from F. Scott Fitzgerald himself.
Yeah, so it's confirmed. It's not an urban, or in this case, suburban legend. And, you know, they're going to really try to maintain the history. They've got a polo pony stables and the mansion itself. They're going to try to preserve all of that and then just build on the open space. The only thing they're tearing down, always the way, is the servants' quarters.
They're the first to go, Frank. That's just the way it works. So, yeah, we need to find someone who's going to buy the mansion and redevelop that, because otherwise that might be torn down. All right, you enjoy the rest of the day at the Palmer House, will you? Are you working or just sort of lounging around there?
I'm eating the desserts and paying close attention to the policy proposals.
Frank's visit is sponsored each week by Allstate, and we thank them. Thank you, too, Frank. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you. Oh, Steve Bertrand here on the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Just a few minutes left on this Wednesday afternoon. So, do you have kids? You know someone with grade school kids into sports? It's the thing now, right? You get a trainer for your 12-year-old, and then you travel the country playing volleyball or softball or basketball. You go to these tournaments for the weekend, things like that, and you have to go somewhere, right? Rockford is one of the places you've been going, and Rockford wants to increase that business even more. They had a nice big opening of a new sports facility this weekend, and I thought, you know, since we're talking so much negative about Illinois economics, it might be nice to be a little positive. John Groh is the CEO of the Rockford Area Convention and Visitors Bureau, and he joins us on a phone line now. John, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, so what's your sport? Volleyball, basketball, floor hockey? What do you do?
My sport these days is attending my kids' sports activities, which is currently soccer.
So do you do the traveling too?
They're a little bit young for traveling teams, but certainly they, at least one of them might be on a road to that. So,
John, do they walk?
do they walk? No, they're a little bit older, 4, okay. 8, and 10, so we're well on our way to traveling sports.
As long as they're walking, it's time for you to start spending more money on their sporting activities.
We might be behind the curve, yeah.
So Rockford already's been working at this, right? You have a pretty good business coming in. I think it was it $3 million a year? How much money came in?
Probably about $20 million a year. It's been a long time that Rockford has been in the amateur sports business, and recently we've doubled down with some new facilities.
Yeah, tell me about this new facility.
So right downtown on our riverfront, we've never had an indoor facility. We've been great for soccer and softball and outdoor sports, but this new riverfront facility is about 110,000 square feet right on the river, and its primary uses are for basketball and for volleyball tournaments, as well as a variety of other team sports that can be played there.
Tell me about the mentality or the approach of using this as economic development. I know it's moved into an old factory, right? That used to be in the furniture industry, an abandoned factory, manufacturing not so much anymore, need to find something else. And so Rockford has turned to kids' sports. How does all that work?
Well, you know, sports tourism is big business across the country, and it certainly is a key pillar of our economic development strategy here in Rockford. So, you know, as manufacturing has moved off of waterways in Rockford, one of the things we've been really intentional about is reclaiming our riverfront for active use by our citizens and by our visitors. So this former industrial complex about 10 years ago was purchased by the city, and, you know, we started dreaming about what it would be. And, you know, as you mentioned, it just opened as this new, gleaming, reused and totally renovated space for basketball and volleyball. And, you know, we know that it's a very recession-proof business sector to be in. Parents are always going to travel with their sports, and it really is a key pillar of our strategy.
It's just kind of funny. I mean, it's not funny to me because, look, I've got a nephew who's going to be a Big Ten college baseball player at Minnesota coming up. Mm-hmm. So, and he, you know, traveled a lot and played. So it certainly does pay off for some, but a lot of us end up at the end saying, what did we spend our money on? I guess it's fun. You build teamwork and all of that.
Exactly.
But it's not just the facility, right? You think this is going to result in more hotels being built in Rockford?
Absolutely. You know, the visitor industry, you know, is all about bringing people to our community who spend money. And this is happening in Rockford and in Elgin and in Schaumburg and other places. And as more and more people come for these tournaments, and they are coming, and we have a pretty long track record with it, it generates demand for new restaurants, for new retail establishments throughout the community, as well as our downtown, including hotels. And so there's a couple of hotels that we know are on the horizon just because of the anticipated increased demand that this new facility, as well as an additional indoor facility that will be for soccer, will generate.
And it's not just your run-of-the-mill gym. I was on a website where it said, you know, this is a nationally ranked facility, a destination. So we're just about out of time, but if people, you know, if they're organizing a tournament or a team here in the Chicago area, how do they find out more information about what's available in Rockford?
Well, the number one place is gorockford.com.